If you're just joining us, my guest is Keith Scott, and he does the voices for Bullwinkle and the narrator and a little bit of Boris Badenov in the new Rocky and Bullwinkle movie. And he's also written a book about the history of Rocky and Bullwinkle and the other cartoons that were created by Jay Ward Productions. The book is called The Moose That Roared. I grew up on cartoons. You grew up on cartoons. I know some of my dreams were affected by cartoons. I used to have this recurring dream where I'd be like driving in a convertible and I'd kind of crash into something and I'd go kind of like flying up into the sky and then slowly fly down, as only happens in cartoons. But I'm wondering if any of your sense of, if any of your dreams or things like that were influenced at all by cartoon physics.
That could well be, because I'm always thinking in terms of gags. You know, when they were doing the old Laurel and Hardy shorts here in Hollywood or Culver City, Stan Laurel had that kind of a mind. If he was driving along and had to brake quickly, his mind would immediately snap to what would happen in a gag, even though he almost just got killed, you know. I tend to be like that. It's this constant exposure to the comedy and the dynamics of cartoons and the rhythm of comedy. So I don't know if that's a good thing or bad.
Do you have any strong feelings about parents and TV executives who actually worry about cartoon violence?
Yeah, I think that's a little exaggerated because they always seem to quote the Roadrunner. And the violence only happens to the coyote in that, and it's self-inflicted. His traps don't work, or he keeps falling off a cliff and ending up looking like an accordion when he walks, and then suddenly he's back to normal again. I think, to me, the more disturbing cartoons are the realistically drawn superhero ones with all of those that constant barrage of noise of machine gun fire, and which I guess has now gone into a lot of the computer games, you know, these awful kill your opponent, all that thing. I think the gag cartoons like Bugs Bunny and all that, I'm convinced that all the kids I knew when I was very young knew that it was just a cartoon, in inverted commas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was a gag. Another problem, too, is the fact that because everything is now constantly repeated on video and television, and there's two or three generations now who don't even realize that 90% of those old theatrical cartoons were made for theaters, for an adult audience, to be seen maybe twice and then put on a shelf forever. And then when this new recording technology with videotape came along, nobody in those days even knew that these things would have a life for 60 years.
You know, I'm thinking in one of the early Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons, Rocky and Bullwinkle make a joke about how the network executives don't like violent cartoons. And this was back in the 50s or early 60s, this cartoon.
Yeah, I think that what happened was that they had drawn them in one episode as if they were going to fall into a cannibal pot on this island of Rikki Tikki. And they got some dictation from the network saying, well, we won't allow cannibalism with our characters. And Jay Ward actually sent a serious letter saying, cannibalism? To eat a moose and squirrel? and that was publicized in Newsweek. And then about the second storyline after that, there was a scene where Rocky and Bullwinkle are captured by a gigantic Native American and tied to a stake and just about to be set fire to. And Rocky whips out a contract and says, the network says, no cannibalism on TV. So he was always biting the hand that fed him. He was kind of a maverick. I'm sure he was one of those people in those days, they used to mutter and shake their heads and say, I don't know, you know, can we end this contract as soon as possible? This guy's too much trouble.
Keith Scott, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry. And I've just got a couple of friends here who just want to say goodbye.
Well, thanks a lot, Terry. Bullwinkle G. Moose here, and doing your show has been kind of a breath of fresh air. You get it? I said,
oh, go away, Moose. That was stupid.
Well, at least I'm consistent.
That's great. Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you a lot, Terry.
Keith Scott is the voice of Bullwinkle and the narrator in the new film The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and he's the author of the new book, The Moose That Roared. That's music from the newly reissued recording Satch Plays Fats, the music of Fats Waller. Our jazz critic Kevin Whitehead says, in the 1950s, a lot of jazz fans disliked Louis Armstrong's band, the All-Stars, and hated their female singer, Velma Middleton. The band usually played a small repertoire and highlighted Armstrong the entertainer more than the jazz virtuoso. Even so, in the mid-50s, Armstrong and Company made two LPs even skeptics approved of. One of those was Satch Plays Fats. Kevin has a review.
I'm walking on air, for I've left all my blue days behind. And I learned how to care, and there's love, really love, on my mind. Yes, I'm the world's most happiest creature. Tell me, what can worry be? I'm crazy about my baby, and my baby's crazy about me. Mr. Cupid was our teacher.
Hard to imagine a better marriage of artist and subject than Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller. Both were early jazz modernists with vision and superb instrumental technique. Fats was one of the best of the 1920s stride piano players. Both also had a keen sense of humor, including an ability to laugh at themselves. They'd been friends since the mid-20s, even before they'd played together a few times in Chicago. In 1929, Armstrong's success singing Waller's Ain't Misbehavin' in the Broadway show Hot Chocolates helped launch the trumpeter as a popular entertainer. That may also have encouraged Waller to start singing on record. And by spooky coincidence, when Fats died of pneumonia on a train stopped at Kansas City Station in 1943, Armstrong was sitting on another train held up nearby. Recorded in 1955, Satch Plays Fats was Armstrong's follow-up to a fine album of W.C. Handy compositions. It was one of those rare sequels that measured up to the original, his Godfather Part II. Half a century later, it's puzzling that contemporary jazz hounds so resented his all-stars, who were really all right. This version included ex-Ellington clarinetist Barney Bigard, Billy Kyle on piano, and Barrett Deems on drums. By the 1950s, Armstrong sang more and played less than most fans wished, and his solos kept close to the melody. But the ways he'd subtly alter its timing and phrasing define what swing is. That's I've Got a Feeling I'm Falling. As good as Armstrong's playing is here, it's still odd anyone complain they got so much of Armstrong, the most influential singer of his century, most influential for pioneering wordless scat singing and for popularizing a rough vocal texture. Since we CD listeners don't have to watch singer Velma Middleton doing splits on stage, a blood-curdling sight by many reports, we can also judge her talents more objectively. She's not one of the greats, but her more plain style could really set up the boss. Middleton knew how to egg him on.
Say, I have no use. use for other sweets of any kind, baby, since the day you came around. From the start, I instantly made up my mind that you're the sweetest sweet that can be found.
You so sweet.
Oh, Pops.
Can't be beat.
You mean it?
Nothing sweeter ever stood on feet. Yes, everyone to be filled with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose.
Say, when you passing by, flowers droop inside.
Composer Fats Waller was such an entertaining singer himself, folks may overlook how carefully crafted his songs are. His chord progressions were so ingenious, generations of jazz musicians have borrowed them for their own tunes. His melodies are equally clever, one reason to be glad Armstrong doesn't mess with them much. It's good that Satch Plays Fats is back out, as Columbia had botched a previous CD of this material by substituting alternate takes for most of the original masters. The new CD restores the old LP program and adds 4 unreleased alternates, plus 7 Armstrong versions of Waller tunes from the late 20s and early 30s. That makes almost 80 minutes of music, as much as a CD will hold. This time, they got it right.
Kevin Whitehead is the author of New Dutch Swing. He reviewed Satch Plays Fats, a reissue on the Columbia Legacy label.
No one talking all by myself. No one walking. I'm happy on a shelf, babe. Ain't misbehaving. Saving my love. Oh, babe, love you. Really, babe, love you. I know a thing. One I love. Through it flooding. You that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving. Saving my love. Oh, baby, my love for you. Jackie Horner, in no corner. Don't go nowhere. And I don't care. All your kisses. Work waiting for me. Daddle, daddle, daddy. I don't stay out late. Don't care to go. I'm home about 8. Me and my radio, babe. Ain't misbehaving. Saving all my love for you.
Coming up, book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews the new novel, Bee Season. This is Fresh Air.